We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man, Andreas Hale. Wow, it's been a while since we talked pro wrestling. Feels like almost 2 weeks, so we have a lot to catch up on. Today, we're going to talk about AEW. Popped a huge rating this week, even going against NBA Finals, so that was really good for them. We'll talk about the latest show. We still have to talk about NXT Great American Bash. We still haven't recapped that one. Plus the fallout and everything we saw in this week's NXT weekly show. And then we got to touch on WWE because the main roster has Money in the Bank coming up. Pretty much the matches are there. We get to see which championship matches are happening as well. Predict cash-ins, maybe no cash-ins. We'll see. We'll get to all of that in our last segment, though. To start off, Dre, I'm not going to lie to you. The energy I had in the last show, we had a good back and forth. The energy was high. I don't have as much energy in this show, and that's because I decided to go to brunch right before we recorded.
Good, good.
I'm recuperating. Get that shit out of your system. I'm recuperating.
Was a little too hyped last week.
We had good feedback. Thank you to everybody who responded. Even though not many people were on my side, I don't care. I feel good about the hot takes. But today, yeah, I need to, you know, I'm starting off the show a little slower because I went to brunch. I am in Arizona for the weekend, so I'm chilling in Phoenix. Brunch scene out here is very underrated. So, dope places. We were actually out here for a Royal Rumble a couple years ago. So that was cool. Yeah. It's nice to be back. Food places are dope. Went to a place out here called Squeeze. Very good brunch spot. You know, it's good when it closes at 2. So you only get breakfast and brunch. Like, that's it. That's all they do. So it was good. But since you are the brunch god, I have a question for you. Can you be an elite brunch spot if you don't have bottomless mimosas?
Yes, you can be an elite brunch spot. Because, look, man, bottomless mimosas are great. But the reality of bottomless mimosas are they're often cheap champagne. And I just drink it because it's free. It's not even free since I pay for it. And I can, I drink as much as I want, but it's not necessarily the best champagne. It's just the idea of you keep bringing me shit. But if you go to other places, they have different kind of mimosas. They have different kind of brunch drinks. And the most overlooked quality when we discuss this is the food. You can have bottomless mimosa. If your food is trash, it doesn't fucking matter. Even though the more you drink, doesn't matter what the food tastes like. So, but I like to go to a good brunch spot that has good food. I prefer bottomless depending on the mood that I'm in. But if they don't have bottomless and they have the option with like some really good drinks or, you know, not too overpriced, then I'm with it. But in order to compete, you know, you have to have either bottomless or some kind of deal like a pitcher or some shit like that. Some places just stingy as hell, but it is what it is. Just make sure your food is good.
The food was great here at Squeeze. It was delicious. I went to my go-to, which is always corned beef hash, egg over medium on top. You know, can't go wrong with that. Real grown-up man meal right there. So I did that. fresh corned beef. It's chunked too. I love when it's cubed, like it's real corned beef in there. It was great. That was delicious. The kids had pancakes of all different types. Those all came out really well. They were happy. Everyone ate. Like Elena had some pancakes. Those were cool. Everyone loved the food. I went to the drink section. One, I get it though. Their mimosas aren't served in champagne glasses. They're served in like tall glasses. So it's a lot of mimosa. And they spike them with different type of liquors. So they're specialty mimosas, but they had like a tequila one. Then they had one that was like mojito, but it was a mimosa as well. So all these different flavors, they look delicious. I didn't get any of them because they were $13 each.
Nah, you should get one anyway.
I couldn't do it. $13 because we paid $20 for bottomless.
Oh, never mind. Okay.
And I just couldn't bring myself to pay for one $13. They had a passion fruit one, though, and a blueberry one. Shout out to you who made me try that last time we went to brunch, which was delicious. But even then, that was a pitcher. I was like, yo, yeah. One drink for $13? Hey. I was like, it was more than my hash. My hash was $11.50. The drink was $13. And I came with the intent to spend money. Granted, we are family of five. I know I'm going to spend money. But I couldn't bring myself to spend it on that.
Yes, see, that makes sense. See, for me, I'll do it because I don't know if I'll ever be back. That's usually my my breaking point. It's like, am I ever coming back here again? And it, honestly, it wasn't my idea. It's my wife's. Like, anytime we go somewhere, I'm like, God damn, this drink costs how much? And she's like, are you coming back? And I'm like, no, I'm probably not coming back. She was like, just get it. Like, if you don't get it, you'll just think about it all the time until you do get it. So that's always been the rule. Am I coming back to this place? No, then I might as well get it, whatever it is. If I am coming back, yeah, if I am coming back, no, I can get it next time. But yeah, shout out to my wife. She came up with that one. That was a good one. I was like, wow, so simple, but so intelligent.
It is. Like, that's a gem right there. Because if I would have done that, we probably wouldn't be opening the show with it. Because now I'm just thinking about this damn drink that I didn't get.
Yeah. And will you really miss $13 at the end of the day?
No,
really
no, I'm about to spend that on something stupid. I spent $13 on dumb shit yesterday. Just on the way out here, we bought like $13 worth of gummy bears for the drive. So, yeah, no, it would have been fine. But, yeah, I was just like, it's something about still looking at a menu. And I've done that, like, a lot lately. I'd say even since, like, being at ESPN, where at least I can make moderately big boy money. Now, right? Like I'm not on your level. I'm not the Andreas Hale budget around here. But like now that I could go places and you know, I try to pull the swaggy move every now and then where I'm out and I'm chilling and they bring the bill and I just throw the card in and boom, don't even look at that check. Here, I got it.
Hey, stop. Always look at the check. I know you got it. I learned this too. Always look at the check because there have been plenty of times that I've been places. Like one time, they gave me the wrong table's check.
Oh.
And it was like $100 more. And I was like, yo, it's just me and my wife. Like, why is this bill $213? And usually I just throw my card and it was like, I got it. No, always check out your check. Always. Always. I know it's some baller shit, but always look at your check. Always.
All right. Well, hopefully that didn't. No, it didn't. Like the correct amount came out, but I will take that advice going forward because I would be tight. At this point, it's going to take too much to reverse it through my bank. So you just got to give me $100 worth of free shit. Like then I'm just be at the bar recouping the money that you took out. So no, yeah, that's usually the case. But now I found myself lately, even being at ESPN, where I'm just like my brokenness. My broke days still hover and loom over me.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm just like, yo, I can't. $13? I used to spend $13 in 3 days trying to eat. And I made that shit work, though. You get a lot of stuff for $13. But now it's like, yo, $13 for a drink? One drink? I try not to be that guy, but I am sometimes. You say it all the time. Where you'd be like, yo, I get a whole bottle for this price.
Yeah.
So it's just, practical. Yeah, so it's like, I was there, I was wondering, I was like, damn, man, not a pitcher, not a bottomless mimosa. I was going to tell you about the spot, I was going to talk it up. That's one thing in our group chat we do all the time, shout out to the Rat Pack, is if someone travels or someone goes to the city They'll be like, yo, you need food places? And we always got like the clutch recommendations in the group chat. People don't fail in the recommendations. So I was like, yo, I'm gonna talk this up to people. And then I was like, but there's no bottomless mimosas. Like Dre would get here. Like you ran be in Arizona, talk it up. You'll go there with someone and be like, this asshole Kel sent me somewhere with no bottomless mimosas. So I had to ask you off rip, like, can you be elite without that? Because then you get to a place and be tight and then blame it on me. There'd be a goddamn Mikel moment. it's just be all bad. So the food was good, though. I told my other friend about it, my friend Ray in L.A., and he's a weird guy because he also goes to many different places. But he's a guy that no matter how much money he gets, his tastes never change, ever. So we were talking about it, and he is like, yeah, it's cool. He's like, should have went to – he's like, you might as well have just gone to a buffet back home. Like, just get anything and just go to a buffet. But like, he swears by buffets. Mm. And I'm like, no, like, buffet brunch don't hit like normal brunch to me. Even on Vegas, on the strip, like, he's like, no, like, buffet brunch is the way – no, like, it don't hit the same at all. And we – me and Elena went to the Cosmos brunch. I forgot the name of that in the Cosmos.
Which one? The Wicked Spoon.
And I was like, I might as well have went to Sunset Station. Like, this shit don't hit the same. When you get a good brunch restaurant, you can tell the difference between that and like a break or an IHOP. Like, buffets, there's a very small difference between like in Boulder Station, Palace Station, and I haven't been to Caesar's Palace, so it might be blasphemy. But I'll say Cosmos Wicked Spoon. People swear by Caesar's Palace. I haven't been there. Bacchanal. Look, whatever.
Yeah, so I'll put it to you like this. I've done every buffet in Vegas. And pre-COVID, I would agree with your boy Ray in certain aspects. Like, you have to find the right brunch buffet that works. Like, the Aria has a really good one. But you need, like... I would never say that a buffet is at the Palace Station is the same as the Wicked Spoon. Nah, food is different. The food is a lot different. So you got to get the right brunch. The right buffet. I don't know how buffets are now because I'm not going. There's no way I'm going somewhere where people are breathing over my shit during COVID and this Delta variant. And then I'm going to, you know, put my serving spoon in there and get COVID from some eggs and shit. That's not gonna happen.
Yeah, that'd be a brick.
Yes, but there are really good brunch buffets in Vegas, and it just depends on what they have. And at the Palace,
he chooses a buffet over a steakhouse.
Well, that's wild. Okay, that's too much.
Like, he's a buffet guy. Like, for dinner, he'll choose it over a steakhouse. I'm like, yo, for what? Like, if he comes into town, he's like, I'm like, yo, you want to eat? Yeah, yo, let's go to this buffet. Like, why? Like, we go to STK, we go here. Nah, I don't want to try it. And they're good buffets, but I'm like, yo, if we're spending 80, we get like the little drink joint where we get the wine or the beers. So if we're spending 80 each anyway, 85 each, like, I might as well go to the steakhouse, spend 110.
It depends if you want options. That's the other thing with the buffet. Like, the Aria buffet is really good because they have the different stations. And then they have like the pasta station where they make your pasta fresh, or they have, you know, the omelet stations if you're going early for brunch. All those things matter. And if you want options, that's the thing about me and my wife. If we want a good buffet, it's because we want to try different shit and we can't agree on the type of food that we want. She may want Italian and I may want Chinese. Hey, I go to a buffet, I can have them both. Then I can flip it. Then I can get some other shit. But it has to be a good buffet. Palace Station? No, Main Street Station. There are some whack ass buffets.
Palace Station redid their buffet. It's actually pretty good now. I use that as a horrible example. It used to be very shitty, but they redid like entire like front and bottom lobby. They actually did their casino over again. But yeah, they redid the buffets. It was delicious. I think Station Casinos have now closed all their buffets permanently though, due to the COVID.
Yeah, so, and I don't blame them. It's dangerous.
Yo, the liability has to be bananas.
Yeah. So
like, you just can't have an outbreak every other day because you're a fucking buffet. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I can't listen. Give me a good brunch spot. I think that's the last bet I owe you is the brunch bet.
Yeah, for now.
Yeah. Well, we only have one bet after. I'm going to win the next one.
Come on, have you told? Did we tell
Tom Brady what- just got a knee surgery. He said he's going to feel better this year. He said last year he played on a torn MCL. I got this.
No, you are the wildest bet. Like anybody who's listening, tell Kale that this is ridiculous. He gave the NFC, he picking Tampa Bay to return to the Super Bowl. I get the field. I get correct. Every team in the NFC. You have to get to the Super Bowl. That means in a volatile league where injuries happen all the time, you're giving me the field.
No, as Tom Brady doesn't get hurt, I'm fine. The NFC is down. They're going to get a bye. So you're telling me Tom Brady has to win two games in the playoffs at home?
I'm telling you that it's nothing is guaranteed in the NFL.
It isn't. But no bet is guaranteed.
No bet is guaranteed.
Most bets are 50-50.
No,
I'm taking this is greater than 50-50.
You're giving me the field.
Yeah, against the field, I'd say the Bucs still has 70% chance of making.
I don't say 70. Here's the best part about it. I get to watch you sweat every single week. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to me until we get to the playoffs. I don't give a shit. I don't care. And none of this stuff matters to me.
As long as they don't miss the playoffs, I'm straight.
That's what I'm
saying. If they miss the playoffs, then I'm a wrap.
Like if
then I'm tight. If it's even close coming down the stretch and they got to like win to get in, then yeah, then. But their division sucks. Falcons suck. Panthers suck. Saints, Breeze is gone. Jameis Winston might be their quarterback. They might have a tight end at quarterback. They suck. Like no one's Tampa Bay's level.
Listen, man. Just saying. Be careful. You know what would be really fun? What would be really fun for me? If the playoffs come down to a game between the Giants and the fucking Bucks, I get to watch you squirm.
Now, at that point, we just got to go. We got to watch it at the sports book of like, we'll go to Caesar Palace because I've never been to that brunch spot. We got to go to the sports book, watch the game. If I lose, then we're headed straight to the buffet. Like, if the Giants win, we're headed straight to the buffet. I'll be the happiest guy ever. We're going to eat. I'm going to be stupid drunk. We're going to have a blast. And then if the Giants lose, and let's say that's the championship game, and then, you know, Tampa goes on, cool. Like, you get to console me because my Giants lost, but you console me with a delicious meal. So that'd actually be all right. It's a win-win.
If you say so, you can call it a win-win, but I will enjoy this. I will enjoy this because, listen, you're picking the Bucks. There's the Seahawks. There's the Rams. There are still my Niners. That's just in the NFC West. They're still there. You still have Aaron Rodgers.
NFC East, no one was even coming close to 500. Aaron Rodgers might not play for them. Like,
let's just say Justin Fields is the truth for the Bears. I'm just telling you. Hey, they said the same shit about Patrick Mahomes. He started. What happened?
Listen,
the Eagles could be all right. You never know. You never know. Tom Brady's old. All it takes is one. And look, I never root for injuries, but I'm rooting for a blindside hit that turns into a concussion. And Tom's like, you know what? I can't play anymore. Then I get to watch you just squirm. But that doesn't need to happen to Tom. Tom can play. I just like to see what happens. This will be a fun year. I can't wait to eat.
I'm gonna win this bet. Before we jump into AEW and the rest of our topics going forward, still one thing we have to talk about. It's been so long that we haven't discussed pro wrestling that we completely missed the topic from last week that I don't want to glance over. So it's one of those that, you know, I was like, yo, we have to talk about it no matter what on today's show. Last week was the 25-year anniversary of the NWO. And to this day, I think it might be the biggest booking decision in pro wrestling history.
It is. The only thing that I can think of outside of that is obviously the Montreal Screwjob. But the end of the day, that's a booking decision.
That is. I didn't think of it that way. But I mean, Brett was gone. Like, right? Like,
yeah,
the company would have been either or. That's polarizing. But Brett was gone. Like, he wasn't going to stay if they didn't screw him. But, like, the NWO one is more, like, changing. Like, no one was leaving. If that shit flops and people don't treat Hogan as a babyface, you're fucked. Like, your whole company's different.
look, it goes both ways. Here's why the Montreal Screwjob is one of the biggest booking decisions. And the listeners, you guys can say which one was bigger. And it's funny because they all happen around like the same 12 to 14 month period. When if the Montreal Screwjob doesn't happen, we don't get Mr. McMahon as the heel. And if we don't get Mr. McMahon as the heel, we don't get one of the greatest feuds in WWE history between Stone Cold and Vince. It all happens because of the whole Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels.
Is that booking, though, or is that a shoot?
That's absolutely.
Because
that's booking.
Bret was shooting on that. Like, Bret spitting on his face and cutting the promo of Vince. Like, that was a shoot. That wasn't booked. That was Bret's reaction.
But Vince turned it into a work with Bret Screwed Bret. He appeared on television and said, Bret Screwed Bret, and became a heel because Bret was so beloved. You also remember, this is before the internet was like a thing. Like, with the internet was huge and dirt sheets. Nobody knew Bret was really leaving. It happened because I remember watching. I was like, what the fuck is going on? Mm-hmm. Nobody knew what happened. So that was a straight up booking decision. The whole course of the WWF changed because of that decision. NWO obviously was huge and it made WCW a force in pro wrestling. So it's a toss up to me. But NWO was so big because nobody ever thought Hogan would turn heel. That was the one thing that was just like, he comes down, Savage is on the ground, and he drops that leg, and you're like, oh shit. I mean, obviously, the NWO is one of the greatest storylines in pro wrestling history because it was blurring the lines between real and fake. Like, what is Hall and Nash doing here? Why are they using their real names? Like, they came out from the crowd. Then, you know, they had a third partner. You wonder who it was. Originally, it was supposed to be Sting, which is crazy. But it ends up being Hogan. Hogan turns heel, turns the company upside down, carries that title. And then through all this, if you go back and watch all this old WCW stuff, the NWO got ruined pretty fucking quick. Like, if you really think about it, it was fun for a while. Then it was like, wait, Vincent, Scott Norton, Horace Hogan? Like, why do you keep adding people? It got out of control really quick. It's like they had a great idea. It was like a good movie with a good intro, like Belly, and then just like a terrible follow through.
Yeah, to me, it's like The Matrix. Like, it started off great in the first movie. The second one starts getting out of control. The third one's like, yo, this is irrelevant.
Or like, Fast and Furious.
People which still I love watch. That shit. You did watch the new one?
Fuck that shit.
I haven't watched it either.
No, hell no. I'm not watching that shit. No,
Tyrese is in space.
I'm so sick.
Oh, Tyrese is in space. I gotta see it.
Just got out of control.
I'm not gonna pay for it, but I gotta see it. Yeah, I mean, dinosaurs are next, or time travel. Something crazy. That shit's the MCU at this point. So, with that being so, the biggest thing about the NWO and the formation, going back to that, is do you remember where you were that night or what you were
yes,
doing?
Yes, I remember exactly where it was. Yes. Yes, I remember exactly, because I had a black box. I watched every pay-per-view. It was Sunday. I think my boy Mook was with me. I'm pretty sure. And I was in my room at my pop's house, and we watched it. And he didn't care because all my friends weren't pro wrestling fans. They just watched the shit because I would refuse to not watch it. So I don't know what we were doing. Probably talking to some girls on the phone, whatever. He was doing something. And I watched this match because I was intrigued because I wanted to know, who is this third member? And I'm watching the match, and Hogan comes down, he drops the leg. And I remember the look on his face because he was like, what the fuck? And I was just like, yo. And then they cut the promo and all the trash is flying in the ring. And I'm like jumping up and down, hollering and shit. Like, I'm straight marking out because I'm like, this is unbelievable. And he's like, he's confused because he's like, I thought Hulk Hogan was a good guy and all this shit. It's incredible, man. It was. And then there's no internet. So what do? You just sit there and like, I'm like, who do I call? Because none of my friends like pro wrestling. Like, who can I tell about this shit? I just sat with it. But then my boys was watching pro wrestling. For those few weeks, that was the time that people who didn't like pro wrestling were watching it. Because Hall, Nash, Hogan, they were cool.
Yep.
They were cool. And it was like, and then the Sting and the Rafter shit. Like, for that brief moment in time, wrestling was cool. Just like when the Attitude Era was cool. The Rock and Austin. And like, my wife used to watch wrestling. And then it just got stupid to her again. She didn't like John Cena. But that was the best years of pro wrestling. That mainstream appeal that everybody watched. But that moment, I'll never forget it.
That night is one of only two WCW moments I remember.
What's the
like other watching one? Live. Because I was always a WWF guy. Or kid, I guess, at that point. But I remember watching that because I was at a party at the same place. It was my grandma's friend who always used to, either everyone came to our crib for pay-per-views because of Black Box, or into her crib for pay-per-views. Her name was Conga. Very tall Puerto Rican woman. My cousin Sydney, still, I see my cousin Sydney all the time, her son. So we were over there, and her name is Conga, like a Conga drum in Puerto Rico, because she's that loud. Like, they just say every time she speaks, she's like a Conga drum. You can hear her forever, right? So her name was Conga. And the list of obscenities that came from this woman's mouth in Spanish and English when Hogan drops the leg is something I'll never forget in my life. And there's, I had to be like 8, 9 years old. So there's kids from like 7, big ass party, 7 through like 16, and everyone's parents. My grandma's there, there's food, everything. She had the big box TV. So big pay-per-views we watch at her crib, because we had like a normal ass TV with the box. She had the giant silver joint, or it was wooden, it had like a wooden case. And the speakers are on the bottom of the case. And we'd watch it over there, and she always had bomb food and shit. And when he drops the leg, boy, like I feel like maybe someone next to her just got hit with a chancla, just chancleta, bam, real quick, just off a reflex. She was so mad. You couldn't tell this woman that shit wasn't real. And she cursed, no exaggeration, for 15 minutes straight. The stuff is being thrown in the ring. I didn't hear nothing. I didn't hear the promo. I only saw the promo because she cut a way crazier promo. Incredible. In Spanglish, nothing but obscenities. Stuff you could not repeat in 2021. She called Hulk Hogan.
Oh my God. Well, he deserved it.
She was always a Hulk Hogan guy. My grandma was a Macho Man Rick Rude fan. Like, yeah, just by nature. But like, Gonga was always a Hulk Hogan fan from like when I started watching wrestling over there, as far as I can remember. And literally that broke her heart. Like, that was the craziest shit. So it's one of those things I will never forget. Midsummer, like, no one had to do shit the next day. My grandma worked for the school district, so like she was off. So everyone was over there. I'm sure they were drunk. I just can't remember at this time. Like, I don't remember adults drinking necessarily, but I'm sure they were all drunk and she was just going. That shit was crazy. So I know how it like affected everyone at that time. It was just bananas. Then this next question. Is that the greatest heel turn in wrestling history?
Yes. Yes. There's no greater heel turn than that. And there are going to be some people that'll say, well, when Austin turned on The Rock and joined Vince McMahon at the end of WrestleMania 17, that was a great heel turn. And it was surprising. Don't get me wrong. But the template had already been set with Hogan. You know, prior to that, I don't think we ever really had a true white meat babyface turn heel. Like, Hogan wasn't just a wrestler. He was like an icon. He was an actor. He was a mainstream superstar who, for most of us who didn't see regional wrestling before Hulk Hogan became Hulk Hogan, there was no chance he was going to turn heel. We didn't like him. Some of us didn't like him because he was still spotlight, but there was no chance of him turning heel. So that moment, that's why it was so shocking. Austin turning on The Rock, that was shocking too. Obviously, the follow through was no good. It was a bad decision at the end of the day. It was like the end of the Attitude Era in wrestling as we knew it at that time. But Hogan was just way more shocking, way more shocking. If that doesn't happen, the WCW doesn't compete. They never compete. Hogan had to turn heel. Can't think of one that's better than that.
So I have to agree because it's just monumental, right? It's not my favorite, though. Is it the biggest? Yes. It's not my favorite. That's why I think people can argue like the Stone Cold one, like it could be your favorite. It's not as big. Nothing's ever as big. But my favorite heel turn is still Bret Hart. Like anti-American, super Canadian Bret Hart. I loved it.
I mean, I thought it was incredible. But the thing about the Bret heel turn was it was a progressive heel turn. Like it wasn't like one night he was a heel. It was like you watched it.
Well, that was on the heels of the double turn, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, but you was watching that happen in real time. Like Austin was getting more and more popular. Bret was bitching and complaining. Like if you remember going into WrestleMania 13, you know, Brett was upset because he had to wrestle Austin again, even though they had the match at Survivor Series. Austin threw him out of the Royal Rumble, and he wanted that the title match. He thought he deserved it. But he would whine, and he was like, why do you fans start liking this piece of shit? Like, Brett was pissed, but the heel, you could see the heel turn happening.
What so was very the title match?
Sit and Taker. Brett comes down at WrestleMania 13. Brett comes down and starts bitching and moaning, and Sid power bombs and was like, get your bitch ass out of here, and then Brett leaves. But that, yeah, that was the title. Like, dude, watch WrestleMania 13 again. Like, nobody remembers that match. It's almost as bad as... Yeah, it's almost as bad as when Hogan and Rock wrestled at WrestleMania and Jericho and Triple H was the main event. Nobody remembers that main event. I couldn't tell you what happened in that main event, but I know it was the main event of WrestleMania. But the real main event was Hogan and Rock. After that match happened, nobody cared. Everybody just wanted to go home because nobody was interested in Triple H at all.
Yeah, a complete Sid versus Taker.
Yep, Sid and Taker.
And Taker wins.
Yes. And nobody cares.
The streak is there. So Taker gets the belt at Mania.
And nobody cares. The match sucked.
Sid was champ heading in, though, right?
Mm-hmm. But nobody cared. Nobody cared. This is why I talk about when we talk about revisionist history with Taker and the streak. There were so many matches that Taker had that nobody cared. It was just like, all right, the Kane feud, all right, cool. But that match, nobody cared. That WrestleMania was a one-match Mania, and it was Austin and Brett by far the best match happened.
Like, not that even, it's beyond me not even caring. I didn't even know that Taker fought Sid at Mania. I didn't know it happened. And we go back and we watch Manias, like during Mania season, we'll go and, you know, we'll do our marathons and all this shit. We've done, is Taker overrated, you know, Taker streak, his match. I didn't even know that this occurred. Like, yo, wow, like, yo. Damn, I gotta watch that Mania back. Brett.
Good luck.
Yo, Brett Austin was the main event? Like the final match?
No. Not at all. No.
I don't think it wasn't, dude, else from that Mania then. I don't know what I've done my entire life. Like, I just skipped over the entire Mania.
That match, the funny thing about that match is they had done it so many times. Well, not so many times. They had done it up to the point where the match was just like, all right, cool. We're going to watch this match. That's what it was, because to that point, their greatest match was that Survivor Series, which was really good. But it was kind of like, in it, I don't want to say it's exactly like it, but when Taker and Foley and Mankind wrestled at Hell in a Cell, that was a cold match. That match was announced and nobody was like, oh, I can't wait for this match, because it came in cold. Yeah. And then they ended up having, you know, Foley gets tossed off with the damn K. We remember that, but the build of that match sucked because there was no build. This match was very similar in that because there was really no build. If you look at WrestleMania 13, it sucks. Like, it really sucks. Taker Sid sucked. Then you had Legion of Doom and Ahmed Johnson versus the Nation Domination.
Whatever.
Yeah. That sucked. Triple H and Goldust. That sucked. Rocky Maivia and the Sultan. And if I remember correctly, I believe this is where Rocky Johnson jumps in the ring to help his son at the end. That sucked. What was it? I'm looking at the list now. The Headbangers, Doug Furness and Phil LaFond, the Godwins, and the New Blackjacks with Bradshaw and Blackjack Barry Windham. They opened the show in a four-way elimination match. That sucked. And then you had Owen and the British Bulldog versus Mankind and Vader. And it ended in a fucking double count out.
Poor Vader. They didn't do right by Vader either in the WWE.
I liked
Vader in the WWE, but then I went back and, like, when I got older and watched other, like, Big Van Vader shit, like, oh, Vader was so dope.
Dude, Vader, I just watched an old Great American Bash. I believe it's 88, 89, maybe 90, when Vader debuts in WCW. And I was like, wow. And I remembered, I was just like, yo, there was so big Van Vader. Much. And then he came to WWE. As a kid, I remember, I was like, why is he so different in WWF than WCW? It was like, it wasn't the same guy.
They put him on Boy Meets World after that. And I loved his cameo on Boy Meets World. But that's not the guy I went back and watched in the late 80s, early 90s as I got older. The guy was an animal. Like, you believed that he was the baddest man on the planet. I've never gone back and watched old like pre-WWE Bam Bam Bigelow. That's something I want to do because it gives like those same vibes.
Watch ECW Bam Bam Bigelow with Triple Threat. Watch that version of Bam Bam. Fuck the one that wrestled Lawrence Taylor. Watch Bam Bam in ECW as part of Triple Threat. And you, it's like the match with Taz. Go watch the match with Taz. It's incredible.
Oh,
and
I gotta check it out. I haven't seen it.
You've never seen the match with Taz?
No, I'm going to
tell you
it.
What happens.
Because I've never seen pre-WWE Bam Bam Bigelow. Ever. Oh, Christ. Not one match.
Listen, go back. Don't read anything about it. Just go back and watch the match. When you see the match, you're going to go, oh, because it's a highlight that you didn't know existed until you see this match. It's an ECW highlight.
Okay. No, I can't. Well, that's what I'm doing after the show then. It's crazy to think, one, the careers of people, you know, pre-WWE. And then now with the NWO, these are the careers of people post-WWE, right? So you have Hall, Nash, Hogan reinventing himself. That spot, they were able to turn older talent and even Hall and Nash, I guess, in the prime of their career into main event players quickly, heat them up, create guys like Goldberg. They had the magic. I'm not calling, I mean, it's so easy to compare AEW and WCW, but you don't know what AEW is going to be. So I don't want to like, you know, saddle them with this. But you can look and see comparisons of like, yo, you guys can turn Chris Jericho into a main event player again. And it feels right. You can get a guy like Moxley and make him something even bigger than what he was in WWE. Feels right. You have Cody to a degree, you know, in-ring prowess aside, is a superstar. You guys were able to unlock that. They were not. Kudos. Like, they got that magic touch right now. Where at this point, I trust everything. WCW had that magic touch around that point. How did they lose that momentum? How did it fail so bad? And then I can hear people saying, you know, like creative control, right? Like that's always things people go to. Like, oh, Bischoff let Nash book shit and then it went to hell. Or Hogan book shit and went to hell. Like, is it that simple?
Yes, it is. Like when you let the inmates run the asylum, it's just going to suck.
But that's what AEW like, does and they're it, fine.
That's different because in WCW, they started, not only did they have the inmates like booking the matches, but there was no checks. There was like, if you ever listen to a Bret Hart interview, and I always know it sounds like sour grapes, but he was like, I'd show up and nobody knew what they were doing. And there was always like a tug of war of who's doing, there was no like parody because, you know, Goldberg got shot up the roster. And then the whole decision for Goldberg to lose to Kevin Nash with that stupid cattle prod at Starrcade, that was ridiculous. But then like all these people wanted to be in NWO. Then you started neglecting the cruiserweight division, which was really the real reason WCW got over. As much as you talk about NWO, the reason like most of us tuned in is because those cruiserweight matches at the top of the card. As soon as we would tune in, it'd be Malenko versus Jericho or Malenko and Mysterio or Psicosis and Mysterio and Juventud Guerrero. That's what put it over. And then those Eddie guys could there, never be like, elevated.
So many people.
Yeah. And like the DDP run was incredible, but there were so many times that they kept the title back on Hogan or they found a way to give it back to Hogan. And people were exhausted because it was like, well, shit, man. Like Luger won the title. He got it back the next night. Piper beats Hogan with a sleeper hold. Nobody knows this. The match ends. You're like, yeah, Piper's a champ. Then you find out it's a non-title match. They did so many bad decisions booking WCW after the NWO. Like the Sting thing was great. Sting and Hogan at Starrcade. So much hype went into that match. Go back and watch that match. It's fucking terrible. And it's overbooked.
Wasn't there a ton of run-ins? Like a ton of like shenanigans and shit. I watched that not too long ago. It was on the network. I was like, why is there so much interference and bullshit in this match?
And then, you know, then you have Vince Russo. Russo comes over with his crash booking from WWF, and it only worked for WWF for a while. But then you used it for WCW, and it just was a mess. It was a mess. Nothing made sense. Then you introduced WCW Thunder. And then Thunder it was supposed to be its own show, but it wasn't good because you had – it just didn't, nothing made sense anymore. Like watch the dying years of WCW, 98, 99, just really bad booking, like terrible booking. And it's creative shit. Hogan should have never been allowed to hold onto the belt that long, but there was no real plan.
Didn't they give Booker T the belt? Wasn't he the last champion?
Yeah, that's 2000. That's after, you know, the sale, but they had so many opportunities to put somebody else over, and they kept burying them in the NWO. And then you had, like, I know some people loved it, but like the Black and White versus the Wolfpack, I fucking hated it. I thought it was the worst booking decision ever.
I like that. Then the LWO comes in it, and then you start getting weird shit. And then Sting joins Black and Red, and then
it was stupid to me. Here's why it was stupid.
Sting joining the NWO might have been the nail in the coffin.
It was stupid because the NWO was so special with three guys. And then it, you know, as they then Savage joined, and you had Perfect and a bunch, and Conan. Then it started getting out of control, right? There was just too many people. But then you did, you split it off with Black and Red, and I'm like, well, NWO is supposed to be a heel brand. Shouldn't it be a entirely new faction to deal with the NWO rather than the Wolfpack? I just thought it was whack because it was like, oh, powers. You could just tell that the same guys were booking the show and refused to let somebody like Jericho get to the top of the card. That's how Jericho ends up in WWF, because there's nowhere for him to go. They put a ceiling over Eddie Guerrero. Obviously, Chris Benoit had he had a nice run, but you know, Eddie Guerrero, Booker T, Chris Benoit, like they had to play second fiddle to anything the NWO was doing. And it's not like Hogan was turning in five-star classics. It's not like Nash and Hall were doing the same thing. And it was so many screwy finishes. That's what, like, overbooked was really because of WCW. It just got out of fucking control.
WWE's doing that shit to T now. Overbooking every finish.
Yeah, it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. But that was the death knell. They had nowhere to go. They signed Bret Hart and ruined him.
Well, Goldberg. Goldberg fucked him up.
No, even before that. Go back to when Bret first shows up. He's just kind of meandering.
I like Gene Shorts, Bret, though. But and I had the Bret Hart hockey jersey.
They just didn't do anything with him. They did nothing with him.
Like, you got to use him. Like, how do you sign Bret ASAP?
Immediately, knowing that where he came from, knowing how much heat was on the WWF at the time for what happened to Bret, knowing how good Bret Hart was, how do you not hotshot him into a title program? Instead, he had nothing to do. What if you ever get a chance to watch those Nitros? He did nothing. Every week he just came out and just kind of stood around with his hands on his hips with his jean shorts on. He had nothing to do. There's so many programs they could have ran. They did nothing. Imagine Bret Hart versus Eddie Guerrero. Imagine Bret Hart versus Jericho. They didn't do any of that shit. It's Perry Saturn, Chris Benoit. They didn't do any of that shit. None of it. And if they did do it, if I'm forgetting and somebody's like, well, he did. Nobody remembers it. It was never like a big program. It's Bret Hart. Excellence of execution. They fucked up big time.
Crazy. And then that was it. 25 years ago, NWO was born. It's like 27 years ago, the company folds. Like, just that easy. It's grand opening, grand closing. So it's cool to go down memory lane, talk about that. It's something I wanted to do. Let's hit our first break. Let's talk about current pro wrestling. We're going to come back talking AEW and NXT right after the break. Don't go anywhere. Be right back.
Hey everyone, it's Lindsay Rhodes, and I've got a new podcast, The NFL Roadshow. Fun and kind of nerdy conversation about the NFL every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I've got some amazing guests that are joining me. I'll be breaking the huddle with the top stories, previewing games. We'll get you set for the weekend fantasy with our Fantasy Friday episodes, and we'll answer some of your questions as well. So subscribe to the NFL Roadshow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. Time for AEW. And Dre, this latest show, first off, congrats AEW going over a mil. 1.1 by some calculations. That is amazing. Damn, they're about to catch Raw here in a second. So that was good. Hopefully it's not a one-time thing. Hopefully this is, a sign of things to come. Competition is great. You know, everything gets better when you have multiple promotions, multiple places for people to shine. It's never good for people to just sit and catering at all. So this was very, very good. Kudos to them. The show this week, though, had its ups and downs to me. I've seen people, I'm looking at this grade right now online, giving it an A. People the night of was like, oh my God, this is such an amazing show. to me, when I was watching in real time, I was like, it's cool. But like a lot of stuff was still hit and miss to me. And then now we have Fyter Fest, which is next week and the week after. I don't know. I'm torn because I see where they're building for the pay-per-view All In or whatever in September, and I like it, but some stuff still isn't hitting to me.
I gave the show an A. I thought it was excellent. I thought the crowd was super hot.
Oh, the crowd was incredible, by the way. Crowd gets an A plus 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 plus. The crowd makes such a difference in AEW. The shit's great. I mean, best fans in pro wrestling.
I mean, I don't think there was much that didn't hit, in my opinion. I thought Britt Baker's promo was A1. I told you it's impossible to keep her heel. She's too fucking good. She's too fucking good. I thought Miro's promo as God's champion is fucking fantastic. I thought this is the best use of Miro since Rusev Day. He's just him cutting promos and, you know, they got the new title, whatever. But yeah, he looked great.
It's a huge upgrade on that title.
The fact that they closed the show with essentially what you would call a mid-card match between Darby, I thought that was great. The coffin match I thought was great. There wasn't much that I didn't like off of this show. Aleister Black or Malakai Black, thought that was great. It was just, really? I didn't think there was too much stuff that missed.
All right. So I will start with the opener, Matt Hardy. In that match, I did do much for me. Honestly, I'm done with Matt Hardy and Private Party.
I was fine with the match. I enjoyed it.
See, I thought it was all right. Christian Cross, cool. Him with Jurassic Express is like, whatevs. Again, it's not bad. It's just like, all right. Like, that's how it opened. Okay, whatever. Hangman Page, Kenny Omega. I like the promo. Right? Like, what the hell can I say? And this is what I mentioned. I see what they're building towards, and I like it for the pay-per-view. Do I need a five-man versus five-man match in 2 weeks? Maybe not. Right? Like, I don't need to see him and Omega do that. Like, I could see Hangman Page wrestle someone from the crew one-on-one. It'd be fine. I don't know if I need a five-man versus five-man with the Dark Order. But I see where they're going. So that one was cool. The promo was all right. There, Britt Baker, I thought her promo, her section, the crowd was hot for. I thought that was cool. Nyla Rose afterwards, whatevs. Like, it's just the big show spot. And this is her first baby face, like, real turn. You know, Nyla just, it was cool. But what has Nyla done recently to deserve that spot, you know? Like, a shot at the champ. It's just the big show spot. So then, after I saw that, I was like, yeah. Okay, cool. Love the main event. Can't say shit about that. Like, it's Darby Allin, man. The guy's looking crazy. I love it. QT Marshall was on my television again. I do not love that. Like, for what?
QT, we all know QT Marshall is whack. But we also all know that everything can't hit on a television show.
No. But, I mean, people act like, you know, unicorns flew out the ass of this show. I'm just saying, like, there's cool stuff, but there was still stuff where I was like, all right. Magic Girl, I was like, okay, whatever. Just trying to get new people on there. Someone who jumped off the screen to me was Wheeler. Him and Sammy Guevara, I didn't expect much from that match. I was like, yo, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So I like that. I'm not sure if he signed permanently, but I thought that was dope. I like Moxley's entrance. Didn't like the match against Machine Gun. Seemed clunky.
I thought it was fine. Look, for TV, this is why
I guess, people get mad.
This is an A show for a TV. This is not a pay-per-view, but this is a show that they did the right thing with the crowd. They gave them the angles that they wanted. Like I told you, they couldn't do Paige versus Omega until they got a crowd back. Because Paige is over. I told you that two weeks ago. Paige is so fucking over. But they can't do it without a crowd. You don't have the same energy. You have a built-in storyline. There's a lot there. The Christian Cage, Matt Hardy. Yeah, was it the greatest match? No. They have history. But there's something there when Jungle Boy was looking up at Luchasaurus holding up Christian. They could be angling towards something. I'm not exactly sure what it is.
Ooh. They Jungle Boy be. Turn? I don't know. That's
I'm just saying because Excalibur called it out. He was like, oh, a confused look on Jungle Boy's face as Luchasaurus is holding up Christian Cage. And the week prior to that, it was Christian Cage, you know, giving the pep talk to Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus coming in. And they had like a conversation. They're planting seeds. I thought this for Dynamite, for TV, this was a really good show. Not everything is going to hit at the same level, but I don't think there was any clear cut misses. Other than seeing QT Marshall on my screen, that'll always be a miss.
Yeah,
but,
always.
But Malakai Black and you know facing off with Cody, look
cool.
If right. As long as he goes over, that's all I care about.
Oh, he's not gonna go. Like Cody's not gonna win. Of course, no. Yeah, he's gonna.
So
go.
It's fine if he kicks him in the next week and tells him to go home with his.
But
kids.
What is Cody? This is nitpicky because I think it works, but. That's the only thing I'm saying where I'm like, yo, you know what? I don't know how to feel about it. I know it's a very good show. I just don't know how to feel about some of the things leading to the pay-per-view. Cause I'm not insinuating that it was a bad show or even an average show. It just left me with a lot of questions and very confused in moments. Cause Cody versus QT Marshall for 3 months was just super babyface versus QT Marshall heel. But now Malakai Black is getting babyface reactions and Cody's kind of a heel. I don't get it. Or is Malakai Black the heel stalking Cody? I don't know what that is.
I mean, this is one of those situations. Once you have a crowd back, people were booing Cody.
Yeah. And I don't get it. And it's only because they put him against Malakai Black. Immediately. Yeah.
I mean, so you know what? I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure if they booed him just because it was Black. I think some people were just sick of Cody.
Shit.
And that has a lot to do with it.
Yes, my people, we have arrived.
Yeah, and waiting for the reality is that Cody's heel a much Cody better heel. Better. So so they could be going to that. But again, this is not something that necessarily bothers me. I think they did everything right for their first, you know, for a live crowd and being on the route. I think they did everything right. I had no issues with this show that were anything for me to call it an up and down show. I thought it was a good show.
I was just confused. That's it. Like a good show. Great show, better than average. I'm just confused by some things. That was the biggest thing. Like Britt Baker, okay, you told me. I was less confused about that because you were like, yo, she's going to be a baby face.
Yeah, it was nice.
I was like, yo, she's such a good heel. Like, no, as soon as crowds come back, she's going to be a baby face. And I'm just like,
they weren't going
to. And then they give her the Big Show moment. I was like, well, fuck, I guess they agree. They saw what Andrea saw and they were just like, they're not going to boo her. So let's just give her the Big Show spot. Christian Cage, is he going to be a baby face? Or excuse me, not Christian Cage. Fucking what? The other Cage, big Brian Cage.
It's dude.
Now Ricky they Starks. Cheated.
Yes, Ricky Starks is.
No, Ricky yes, Starks. Incredible. Ricky Starks incredible.
But he's going to be the heel.
Brian Cage is the like baby face. Like I'm supposed to sympathize.
Yes,
big ass dude. Your big ass dude. They beat the skinny guy.
They cheated him out of the match. They cheated him.
I don't know if they cheated him. Cage is.
I'm fine with it because there is look. Brian Cage is a guy. He's never going to be the top guy. He's going to be a guy.
Yeah.
And you're going to get what you're going to get out of this. You're going to get Will Hobbs versus Brian Cage at some point. Big meaty men slapping meat. Ricky Starks. The only thing I will say about Team Taz is I need Team Less Taz. I need Ricky Starks to be the mouthpiece. Not that he's bad, Taz, at what he does, but I think allowing Ricky Starks to break out. Will make a whole lot more sense. I even liked the entire the interaction with Tully Blanchard and LAX. I thought that was funny because they had the crowbar and threatened to crack him over the head.
I thought that was cool. Yeah, LAX is showing glimmers of hope.
I mean, we knew it was coming.
Yeah,
they were not going to be held down for too long.
No,
just got to short things out.
Just
so, yeah,
let them run with it. Let them run because you can see it now. Now it's coming. Now it's developing. Conan is back, but he's with someone else. Or no, he was with them, but they brought in someone else last week, which was weird. But now it looks like they might have Conan and then Tully's there. Like, it's okay. Let them run. Let them run with it. Let's see where it goes. Don't quiet them down again. I love the Bucks as heels as well. And to me, like, you can kind of have like a heel versus heel matchup. I don't even know if LAX are heels right now.
They're not. The Inner Circle of
babyfaces. Yeah, like, so, but I mean, even them within the Inner Circle, they're kind of like, I don't want to say the Stooges, but they're the rough around the edges portion of the Inner Circle. Like, if Jericho needs shit to get done, he definitely sends them to do it.
No, he sends Hager to do it.
Oh, God. No, Hager takes the pin. Hager's horrible.
Yes, but that's Hager's what they send horrible. To do the job.
Yeah, but, like, if he needs, like, someone to get beat up backstage, or he needs to start a ruckus, LAX goes in there and starts the ruckus. So it's just, but I think, yeah, they're trending in the right direction. I'll be happy when, you know, the crew beef is over and we can see where they go after this. But I definitely like what they're doing with them. It's just, some things are confusing. The babyface heel dynamics of some of the matchups are confusing. I was further confused by what I saw this week. Matches, though, promos, it's a very above average, great show this week, though. And I'm glad it popped the rating it did. They are doing right by the people they have in positions. All summer, or I guess we're in the summer, all spring, all winter, I was very vocal. You agreed to an extent of, I don't know what the hell they're doing with their mid-card. They're very good at the top.
Yeah.
The card's a little shaky. It was carried by, like, the Darbys, the, you know, the younger guys, MJF at a point. And I was like, I still don't know if the mid-card is really there. Now I can say it's there. Because they have three mid-card feuds that are just great to me.
Yeah, everything is kind of feels like it has a purpose. That's the feeling of the show. Like, everything on this show feels like it's doing something, moving towards something. Like, even if you call Miro the mid-card champion, there's something there. And, you know, they're going to go with, I mean, look, Moxley's a top guy, but they're going to go back to the Lance Archer match. They referenced the New Japan match, which was actually pretty fucking good and violent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's things that they're going to be able to do that's going to be enjoyable and fans are going to like it. And, you know, as long as they don't start overbooking shit, they're in a good spot. They're in a good spot, especially as the alternative. There is a reason why that crowd is hot, is because they believe in the product. I don't know if Raw, I'm not going to specifically say the SmackDown because they have the Roman program, which is hot. Yep. But Raw is going to have a really hard time if they think fans are just going to be reacting positively to all the bullshit they've been doing.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, even diehard WWE fans, I think you're hard pressed if you see online to get anyone to say that Raw is even comparable to SmackDown.
It's not like it's not at all. Like, no, Raw sucks. Like,
yeah, Raw is the worst television program pro wrestling wise going. And I'd rather watch Impact. Shout out to Justin.
Yeah.
I the group. Like, I'd rather watch Impact than watch Raw. I catch Raw the next day and I skim through it. I read recaps to make sure I didn't miss anything. Like, it's almost unbearable. And it's the longest show. It's almost unbearable. Except Ricochet's getting a push, so I've watched all the Ricochet matches.
If you call that a push.
He's on television. How about that? He's on television. I'll take it. If it's not a push, he's on TV. And then we have NXT. We didn't recap Great American Bash, so might as well talk about that now. I thought it was cool. It was all right. It was better than the pay-per-view that they just had.
Okay.
Right? Like, for a TV pro, I think it was better.
Sure.
MSK versus Ciampa and Thatcher, I thought was cool.
Yeah, it was good. I don't understand why fans are still booing MSK. I can't figure this out.
I'm not sure if they're going to cheer them. I honestly don't know if they're ever going to get cheered. Because I like them. I think they're cool. I don't know why fans are booing them, but I think that's the thing. And eventually they might have to go heel because of it.
I don't get it. I don't get it. But it feels like a very ironic booing. It's like, oh, let's just boo him because we don't like how Jordan Oliver looks or some shit. Not Jordan Oliver, but they don't like how they look. I don't know. It's a weird thing.
They don't like the name Wesley.
I mean, it is whack, but I'm not going to boo him because of it. He's Desmond Xavier.
God, yeah. Man. No, I thought the match was cool, though. I thought that was good. LA Knight, Cameron Grimes led to what we thought it was going to lead to. loved the promos this past week. Love them.
The best part is Cameron Grimes is so stupid and goofy that he doesn't care. Like it, this whole Butler thing, he like, you know, gets the little boy to go cut the lawn. Like he's wearing like his skimmies with some, yeah, with his cowboy boots. Cause he's still rich. Even though he's a Butler, he's still rich and he doesn't care. This is worked to a T. I enjoyed this a lot. The right man won, you know, LA Knight winning and having Grimes as his Butler, but Butler's too dumb to give a shit. I enjoy that a lot. I thought it was great humor. I thought the packages this week were fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah, that was really good. The match was there, but the result is what mattered there. And then Io Shirai, Zoe Stark defeating The Way. I was surprised by that. I don't know why Io Shirai and Zoe Stark are really a thing unless they break up sooner or later. I don't know what this is a vehicle for, but I'm all the way in on Team Index. So listen, it led to more Index moments and I'm here for it. But the match and Io Shirai holding the title, I don't get it.
You know, anything
to keep her in NXT.
Look, it's the, how do I say this? It is the direct consequence of them introducing tag team titles that never needed to be introduced in NXT. Because there's no reason for this. I said it when they introduced them. I was like, y'all don't do enough with the ones that you already got.
Yeah.
But now you have tag teams. And, I mean, we could roll into it as we continue to talk about Great American Bash. Now you call up Chachi Blackheart and Tegan Knox, who Tegan has come back to attack Candice LeRae or to feud with Candice LeRae for hurting her. And then on Friday, she's on SmackDown, which you pulled her right out of that program. But now you lose Chachi Blackheart, who was teaming with Ember Moon. So now there's no tag team. So how many tag teams are left?
Two. They're doing a
good job of building the Casey chick and the black girl with the dreads.
But they're never going anywhere. Casey Catanzaro and Kaitlyn Carter, they're not going anywhere. Right. So if you look at their tag teams, there's like three of them. And I guess you could count. Well, you can't because Aaliyah just left the Robert Stone brand.
Yeah.
And they're using Taya Valkyrie. So I don't know if Taya is going to be in a tag team. But the fact that they had these tag team titles to begin with, where it would have been much better going back to when Nia Jackson and Shayna had the titles, if they just go from show to show defending those titles, that's a lot better than being forced to put, you know, Io Shirai into a tag team because you have titles, you don't know what to do with them. It's a direct consequence of that. I don't get it. I don't get it. And now that you're moving these parts, the Tegan Knox thing is baffling to me. To move her, and some people are like, well, you know, she got to get her opportunity. Yo, she has a program right here with Candice LeRae that would have been great in NXT. What is Tegan Knox going to do on SmackDown?
Nobody
even knows who she is.
No, I was thinking like maybe they can package her as something. You know, she's a blank canvas, so she's whatever they want her to be. But also the injuries, it's kind of like, yo, it's time to get off the pot.
But what are we doing? Like, there's nothing for her to do. But she came in as a blank canvas, which makes it even worse. It's not like she, because obviously Shotzi has the tank. She has something that Vince clearly likes. A look, something that's very distinctive about Shotzi Blackheart. If you look at Tegan Knox, she's just a girl. Yeah. And that never works on SmackDown or Raw. If she would have came into her feud with Candice LeRae and had a great showing and like put herself back on the map, because if you're a lapsed fan and you come back every now and then, you're like, who the fuck is Tegan Knox? And now why is she on SmackDown? Like, I don't even know if they're going to do the right thing with Shotzi Blackheart, because
Shotzi has a much better chance.
But the problem is, well, now you have too many baby faces on SmackDown.
Yeah, they needed heels.
They desperately need heels. We got Bianca. Like, by the time you guys listen to the show, Bianca Belair and Carmella will have wrestled, because Bayley's now hurt with a torn ACL, which should be out for a minimum of 9 months.
Yeah,
they're in trouble. And then what do they do on top of that? They bring Mandy Rose back to NXT. What the fuck are they doing?
I feel like Raw is packed full of baby faces too.
They
need to shake up badly. They might have to just be like, yo, Asuka, come back to SmackDown and try to figure out a way to turn Asuka heel.
They've damaged her so much in the process where it's like,
yeah, but she's like the hand, or at least, you know, like, yo, she's going to give us great matches. right? Like, she can act like she's buddy-buddy with Bianca and then turn on her and just get us through the winter. Like, she's that good where you'd be like, yo, just help us get through it. Like they do with Kevin Owens, like they do with AJ Styles at points. Just like, yo, just help us get from point A to B, because shit is kind of fucked up right
now. It's really a mess. But the Great American Bash was, it was fine. It's like, it was the tag title change is weird. What else do we have in that card? Obviously, we had
just one Cole, other thing, Cole O'Reilly,
and it was, and it's weird because I was like, this should be really good, but it was fine. I wasn't like blown away by the match, and then as the match is happening, I'm like, this ain't working for Kyle. Something's not clicking. There's a lot of things. It's because Kyle's a great wrestler, but babyface Kyle in this feud, even like the promo, well, the interview he cut the following week, this past week, I was like, I can't ever see him as a top guy based on the way this character is being presented. Something's goofy and weird about it. But in ring, he's great. But this feud with Cole is like, I'm kind of over this. I don't know.
I mean, it seems like they're going to blow it off now, and they need to.
They absolutely have to.
Yeah, and just, what's next for Kyle after?
That's the problem. You blew up the Undisputed Era.
Cole will be fine.
Now, yeah, Cole is Cole. He's going to be fine. But you blew up the Undisputed Era. Bobby Fish is kind of floating around now. You know, this week, Kushida comes and helps him. That feels weird. Roderick Strong and Diamond Mine. All right. Malcolm Bivens is just phenomenal in whatever he does. I'm glad they gave him something to do because he's just way too good. But it feels like even Roddy with Bobby Fish, it's like, this is so weird that you blew up the Undisputed Era, and it's like, they're so much better together. And I know sometimes you need a change, but hypothetically speaking, wouldn't it have been so much better for, and we hate call-ups, but let's just talk of like a utopian wrestling universe. If you called up the whole Undisputed Era to wreak havoc on the main roster.
Oh, it would have been great.
As a unit. But now Vince, you broke probably them up.
Like, yo, you're calling up four small guys to do what?
Right.
Attack. Right.
But that's Bobby, what I'm saying.
Lashley, like, that's not believable. Like, you know, it's fucking Vince. So,
no, in a utopian situation, you would call up the Undisputed Era and everybody would pop because they'd be top guys immediately. They'd be a top faction immediately. Adam Cole, baby, would be over immediately. All this shit would be over. But now you broke them up and they're not as good alone as the sum of their parts. Yes, Cole is great. But Cole by himself is not as powerful as he is with the squad. Like, that squad means something. Them separated, it hurts Fish. It hurts O'Reilly. I don't know what's going to happen with Roderick Strong, but it just doesn't feel like those three on their own can get very far.
No, I 100% agree. So, I mean, listen, the other thing we had on this was the Hit Row Cypher.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, before I talk about that, like, maybe Kyle O'Reilly could be a good foil there and challenge for the North American title going forward.
Well, it seems like Santos Escobar is going that route.
For now. I mean, they're crewing it up, but I don't know if he's going to win.
No, he's not going to win. Well, see, look, man, Santos Escobar, we keep saying it. He looks like the guy. He also looks like the guy that they wanted Andrade to be because he speaks very good English. Mm-hmm. And Vince, for whatever reason, just has an issue with guys who don't speak good English. But, and it's also weird to see Andrade on AEW, and every time he talks, there's subtitles. Feels very strange. But but Santos looks like he should be a guy with a title in a major way. But I can't see him getting the title off of Swerve. He's lost more than he's won recently.
Yes.
And I'm not sure exactly what we're doing with this now. And not to say that they can't figure it out, but I feel like Santos Escobar needs to be in a winning program sooner rather than later.
Yep.
And I don't know what that program is.
I mean, there's plenty of crews now and factions to feud with, but is he going to beat the Diamond Mine? Like, it's kind of getting weird. Like you said, he needs a viable option for him to go over and win. And I'm not sure if, like, Sheeta's great. And it's a cool run with the, you know, cruiserweight belt. But I liked it better when it was on Escobar.
Right.
Can he win that back? Or is that a step backwards? Because now we both know they're booking him like he's more than just a cruiserweight guy. So can he really go back and get that title? Like, I don't know.
he has to win. The problem is you have to win. So I don't want to say NXT is in a bad place because like Hit Row is great. The LA Knight, Cameron Grimes stuff is great. But they have, I thought this was some can't miss shit. They have sincerely fucked up with Karrion Kross.
Yeah, I mean, I understand fans aren't fucking with him like that. I really liked how this latest episode finished with him attacking Joe. I thought he was going to drop the belt, one, to Gargano. I thought the match with Gargano was good. And people understand early on, they're like, yo, Gargano's carrying him. But I think by the end of it, you're like, yo, they're both going. And this is both really good. And then him showing his vicious angle and choking out Joe takes him away from what the biggest problem is that they built him up as a tweener after he came back. He's not a tweener. He got to be a fucking killer. No pun intended. He has to be that monster heel. He's not a good guy. And they tweened him out and it was whack. So yes, he has to be Gargano. He has to crush Samoa Joe, who fans are really behind. He has to be an asshole in every sense of the word.
This is why I say they fucked up with Kross. They pushed him up the card too fast. They didn't really build him. They just, here, beat up Ciampa, title match. You're the champ. Now you're hurt. Then you have a program with Santos Escobar. Nobody knows why. It just, for no fucking reason, they do this program. Then he gets the title back again over Balor. Now he's the champ. You do this fatal four-way, or was it four or five? How many people?
Five. Fucking it was five.
Five. Four of them are established NXT talents.
Yeah.
Super established. With incredible chemistry. And every time Kross came in, even though I got it, knowing what Kross's style is, if you're watching Kross for the first time, you never saw him in FCW, you didn't see him on Impact, he's just here and he's hot-shotted up the ladder, it felt like they were hiding him. And people are going against what Kross is now because Gargano earned it, Cole earned it, Balor left, came back, earned it. You know what I'm saying?
Kyle O'Reilly earned it the first time. They didn't even rock it to the top.
Right. So, but Kross is getting hot-shotted to the top. Then you put it after the Santos Escobar program, you put him in there with Balor. He wins the title back. You do this fatal five-way. Then you do a match with Gargano, who is supposed to be a heel. What are you doing to, because no matter what, Gargano's a heel, but he's NXT.
Yeah.
Like he is like the heart, like what Sami Zayn was to NXT, Gargano was that guy. You can't really see him leave. He should always be there. He's never going to give you a bad match. Even if he's a heel, you appreciate him. But as soon as a match they feel like is not to Gargano standards, they're going to blame Kross.
Which is odd because I thought this one was.
I thought it was a good match as well, but people are not happy with how quickly Kross had moved up the card and the gray area that he's been competing in.
Yeah.
He's getting out promoed. Every week he cuts a promo, somebody slays him.
Gargano just ripped him a new one last week. Ooh, so you can't lace my woman's boots, boy. Like, so yeah. Which is crazy because seeing Kross before on the mic was his strong suit. He was always a good talker. I don't understand it.
But it's a real simple fix. If you build him slow and you let him like pulverize, you know, smaller guys or guys who aren't champions, or, you know, have him obliterate a Roderick Strong, have him obliterate a Bobby Fish, have him destroy Kushida, build up that heat. So when he gets that moment, it means something. Mm. Nothing means anything now. He's at the top of the card and nobody cares. Nobody likes it. I haven't seen anybody go, man, I really like Kross as champion. It doesn't work.
Yeah. I like Kross. I'm not sold on him. Like, this championship run is like, whatever. The only way to fix it then is to call him up because he has the look, he has the girl, he has the music, and build him the right way when he goes up.
They won't. They won't. That roster's too crowded. That roster, I mean,
Kross, I think he could terrorize SmackDown or Raw.
Here's the issue.
Plenty of people are Raw. He could beat the shit out of Ricochet. He could beat the shit out of Morrison. He could beat the shit out like Cedric. But he could beat the shit out of, and then just work your way through the mid card. I don't even know who has the title now. Oh,
Sheamus.
Sheamus. Like he'd beat the shit out of everybody in the mid card.
Here's the problem. Kross has been positioned on NXT as a monster.
Yep.
When he shows up to the main roster, he's not going to look that big anymore. Randy Orton.
He don't look that small.
Bigger than Kross. No, but he's not going to look as imposing. So you have to build him. I mean, you have to build him a certain way. There, you have to slow play him. Could it work? Yeah, but as we know, Vince loses interest in guys really quick. And it's not like when you look at Cross, like you have to watch him work to really appreciate what he does. Yeah. But if Cross were to walk into a room, he's like, he just looks like another guy.
I don't know. The tattoos, everything works. Like, so honestly, he doesn't look like another guy. Like the bald head, the craziness, like it works. Just something is missing in NXT and they can't get it back. It's, again, it might take a while, which it shouldn't, but it might take a while on the main roster. But I look at Riddle, Matt Riddle. It never really clicked in NXT like it should have. He went up too early. We're like, fuck, Riddle's, he's in trouble. But they were like, yo, just do what you want. And he'd be like, all right, I'm gonna be a goofy stoner. And then now he's kind of transitioned the goofy stoner role into, I'm gonna go out there, have fun, I'm gonna be likable. And he's found his niche. And I think he's set in his role. Like he'll be a mid-card guy to higher for as long as he wants to be in WWE. I think he's set because he found his role.
I don't think he's set. I think this is, I don't want to say it's the same as Otis, but it's one of those things that can work against him. If they don't take him seriously sooner rather than later, he becomes a comedy act and he gets stuck there.
Yeah, but Otis never had the Randy Orton. Like, I feel something is better. Otis went from tag team to take off your shirt to belly roll to worm to money in the bank. Like, what? Riddle has had Hurt Business feud, him versus Lashley, beat Lashley for the title. Okay, dropped the title, RK Bro. Like, he's proven way more than Otis.
But what I'm saying is, like,
it's very Nakamura like, where Vince, I can't guarantee you'll be at the top, but Nak is always around.
It's just that Vince, once he finds something funny, he latches onto it really tough.
Yeah.
And the Riddle thing is fun and it's really good, right? In the right hands, it works. But in Vince's hands, it could take away from how good of a talent he is. Because at some point, Matt Riddle needs to become a killer. At some point. And he's got it in him. He's a phenomenal talent. They just got to figure it out.
Showing flashes of it. It has to be Kurt Angle, right? If someone can sit Vince down and be like, yo, there was sexy Kurt, there was milk chugging Kurt. You see this shit and it was funny and the promos were great. But do you remember this is exactly still who he was in the ring? Where he snapped in the ankle lock and he looked great. He was always Kurt Angle in the ring. Okay, we got to do that with Matt Riddle.
Yeah, he's wildly talented. But all this to say is that when Cross comes around, so like Vince will look at him and be like, this is great. And I feel like in a matter of a couple of weeks, he could lose interest, right? It's like Otis was fat and jolly. Vince likes that shit. Certain guys have a certain look that Vince likes. Cross doesn't necessarily like he doesn't stand out like some of the other guys do. So if it ends up becoming a situation where Vince likes him and then he's, you know, loses interest, then he's lost. You know, Vince is a body guy. Cross looks good. But again, I always look at Randy Orton. People forget how big Randy Orton is. That's a big motherfucker.
Yeah, no, definitely.
You know, Orton's big. And you look at some of the other guys like, all right, so where exactly do you put him? Like Sheamus is bigger than Cross. So it's hard to look at Cross as a killer if you don't position him the right way immediately. So I don't know. I just wish they would have slow played him through NXT to the point where it's a boiling point where it's like, all right, if he shows up on the main roster, we know he's a killer because we just watch him nuke people in NXT. We haven't really got that. We're getting nuked on the mic. Like, what the fuck are you doing? It's too good for that. But we'll see. I can't believe it's one of these. We said Riddle was can't miss. We said Cross was can't miss. And the only people that could fuck him up was WWE. It's happening again. At least Riddle seems like he's rebounding.
Yeah. Cross is struggling. And we'll see. We'll see if he can get something back against Samoa Joe, if that's the program. They're in a weird spot. And he's not necessarily a guy who can just lose now and then do what? I don't know. I don't know what they do with him. We'll see how that plays out. I know what we're going to do. We're going to hit a break. When we come back, we're going to end this by going through and previewing, giving our predictions for Money in the Bank. Main roster stuff coming up right after this. Don't go anywhere. Be right back.
Pele leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change for Eddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure.
New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcasts.
What up, everybody? We're going to close this out by talking WWE Money in the Bank. One of my favorite pay-per-views every year. Most recent years, I've been disappointed, right? Like, I can't tell you I was happy about Otis. Like, I wasn't. Like, it made no sense. King Corbin, that was stupid. I don't even know who won it before then. So they've been on the streak of really shitty Money in the Bank winners. I like the people in this match. The card should be okay. I have high hopes. Am I wrong for that, Dre? Am I wrong for having high hopes?
Yeah, because all you can do is disappoint yourself.
Oh, damn it. Yeah, let's go through the card. My hopes have been lowered. We have AJ Styles and Omos versus the Viking Raiders. Let's be real. It's time for them to drop the belts. I just don't
just
know.
Got if them. How many times? How many times did they defend those titles?
I don't know. They got them at Mania, no?
Yeah, I know.
They've defended them. AJ was gone forever. I'm not sure if they defended the titles. And it's already time for them to drop it. It's gimmicky. It's
over. That's the funny. It's like, all right, it's time for you guys to come up off them titles. It's yo, it is very, very strange to look at because it's like, yeah, I'm over it. I'm over it already. I don't care. But they'll probably win here. I can't see them separating Omos from AJ yet because Omos needs work and he needs to be hidden behind AJ. AJ eating the pin kind of signaled to me that they won't lose. So I'm going to pick AJ and Omos to hold on to these titles as much as I don't care about this shit.
Yeah. All right, I'm gonna do the same. You talked me out of it. I honestly, Viking Raiders are a good team. They are an actual team. I don't know what they bring. They just came off of a long injury, didn't build back up at all, and just went into a title program. So why should they win? Really, looking at the landscape of Raw, RK-Bro should be the champions. And then you figure out what you're gonna do to break that program whenever that happens. But I think RK-Bro should face Styles and Omos at SummerSlam and win those belts. It's the payoff in a great run for Matt Riddle, who we talked about just a little while ago. So I think that's the way to go in that one. But so Styles and Omos maintain it, keep the belts. Then we have Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair.
God, I'm tired of this feud. I mean, Rhea has... You feel like Rhea has to go over, but why have they done this for so long? Like, why?
Why shouldn't Charlotte win at SummerSlam because it's bigger? But Charlotte's winning this. Fuck it. Give me Charlotte. I'm tired of Rhea's champion.
Who?
She's not a good champion.
She's not. You're right. She's not.
And she's a little heely now, so let her go feud with Bianca in the shakeup. Like, I'm over it.
I think we all are over it, right? Like, I think none of us really care anymore. But Rhea needs to go over clean, man. Like, she has to. I just, when you talk about confusion between face and heel, I don't know what the fuck this is.
Oh, my God. Every week is different. Every week it flops. I couldn't tell you. Then we have, I didn't know both titles were defended on this card. Wow. Well, let's go Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio versus the Usos.
Okay.
We know what the hell's going on. We know what I mean,
the Usos got to go over, man. Get the titles on the Usos, shit.
Yeah, not even fucking DY can stop the storyline. That's how powerful Roman Reigns is right now. Yeah. But boy, what is it, Jimmy Uso?
Oof.
Got caught in a pretzel. This motherfucker blew 3 times the legal limit. And they were like, you're not fucking this up for Roman. get your ass back.
Pretty much.
Did he? And just kept it moving. So, but they did punk him out and be like, no, you're in the family. Enough of the bullshit. He was like, all right. Take this crowbar to the mouth. So.
It's so weird. Yeah.
So weird. They got to win. Rey Mysterio, Dominic Mysterio. Again, talk about title defenses. How many title defenses have they had?
I don't know. Have they had any?
I don't think so. They just carried the belt. It's made no sense for them to be champions. Dominic Mysterio's not good. At least not yet. It's ridiculous. Rey Mysterio had a shot at the regular title in Hell in the Cell and hasn't defended his own belt.
It's
get that shit off.
It's indefensible. Yeah, it's all
you have the Street Profits chilling like, okay.
Yeah, cool. Dude, absolutely. Right. Again, absolute mess. I don't know what the fuck they're doing.
How bad does Otis look with the new look?
Hey, I don't know.
He got to go. For his own sake.
Yeah.
Not because he's bad, for his own sake.
You're right. I don't know. I don't know what this company is doing anymore. Yeah, the Usos need to win. God, this card kind of sucks, man. You're talking about being optimistic. I'm looking at it and I'm like,
It doesn't suck. There's just a lot of clear things. Like, don't play me. Like, there's a clear cut winner in all these matches. Don't play me. Don't give me a false finish. Don't give me no dumb shit. Like, come on, the Usos got to win. Clear cut. Charlotte should win. Clear cut. Rhea's whack now. A lot of these people got the belts at WrestleMania and it's just been like, nah. All of them are forgettable.
I mean, it's also going to be strange because this is what I was talking about. They get a crowd back, but I think they're underestimating what this crowd's going to do. This crowd's not going to cheer for Charlotte. They're not.
No.
And you basically, you've created a Rhea Ripley that nobody cares about now because you haven't established anything with her. So this match isn't going to be as hot as they might think it is. So, and they're saying the Usos match is going to be on the pre-show?
Is it?
They got to stop with doing this to the damn Usos. I didn't even know there was going to be a pre-show.
Me either. This motherfucker is lucky he's on the card. Like, he was 3 times the legal limit. This is not the day I'm riding for him to be off the pre-show. So
stupid.
And then we have, let me get my train of thought going. Bobby Lashley versus Kofi Kingston. Sir, they're talking about fucking Goldberg coming back on Monday. Like, Kofi can't catch a break. Kofi, go out there, take this ass with him, man. That's cool. Whatever.
What are we doing to my man here?
Great build to the program. Xavier Woods pinned Bobby Lashley. That's my highlight of the week. Everything else, I don't care. Like, Kofi's not winning. Xavier Woods got his win by Rolla. I loved it. His promo calling Usher on Twitter is hilarious. Check out his Twitter feed if you guys haven't seen that. That shit is great. Man, he ain't winning. Goldberg? The fuck do we want Goldberg?
Buddy.
What is Goldberg?
We don't. Nobody asked for Goldberg. So you know what they think. Again, they think that if Lashley goes over, now if this is the plan because this is just a rumor, but it seems like Goldberg's coming back for Raw. They think if Lashley beats Kofi, and I guess you completely dead this program, and in order to really establish Lashley as a champion, he has to go over on Goldberg. Now, the problem with that is
Goldberg.
That's one. Two, what if Goldberg says, I need to go over again? They've done this before.
Yes, they have.
So it's like, and I guess they feel like at SummerSlam, it makes it so much bigger to have Lashley versus Goldberg because it's like a dream match. Because from what I've heard, it was supposed to be Brock and they couldn't get Brock. So that leaves them with Goldberg, which is like, dude, just get somebody fucking else.
Somebody
like, seriously.
New. Like, you got.
But you haven't built anybody. That's the problem. Yes. Disrespectful wealth of talent. But, you know.
Yeah, that's it. Just gotta just sigh. What a melancholy note we're ending this show on. Roman Reigns versus Edge. Roman ain't losing this shit till Mania, so what am I predicting? Thanks for coming back though, Edge. Like, give me a false finish. and carry this into SummerSlam.
Sure. Yeah, there's no way Edge is beating Roman. Hopefully we don't get some kind of screwy finish and they do this again at SummerSlam. They could. I don't think Edge is coming back for a Money in the Bank and then disappearing again. However, let me change that. It seems like they're going to Edge and Rollins. And that's actually a really good SummerSlam program.
That is.
I just don't know how they get there from here. They have to get there somehow. I don't know how they get there, but they're going to get there somehow. Yeah, I mean, Roman's got to go over. Hopefully it's a good match. I guess that's all we can really care about, right?
Yep. I think you're right. Maybe they blow that off, and maybe the John Cena rumors are real. Roman John is a pretty big program for SummerSlam.
It's a fun match. It'll be a really fun match. But,
so you know, we'll see. Let's see how that one plays out. Now we're just left with the Money in the Bank matches. Damn, I started off so optimistic. Now I'm just like, oh, it's going to be a shitty Sunday. Oh, listen, women's Money in the Bank match. Asuka versus Naomi versus Alexa Bliss versus Nikki A.S.H., almost a superhero, versus Liv Morgan versus Elena Vega versus Natalya versus Tamina, who are the tag team champions.
Okay. Can we start with this? Let's eliminate who's not going to win. Tamina, Natalya.
Yep.
Like, we can eliminate those two quick.
Quick, fast.
Zelina Vega is a weird person to put in this match. She comes back and she gets nerfed by Liv Morgan like immediately, and she's still in the match. It's really strange.
Yeah, I don't get it. She's not winning.
She can't win. Nikki could win.
Nikki's not winning.
But it's almost like putting the briefcase back on Otis. So that doesn't matter to me. So to me, Asuka can't win. She's not going to win.
She won last year.
The only person it could
Naomi's not winning.
So it's either no. So it's Liv Morgan or Alexa Bliss.
That's it.
And it's going to be Alexa Bliss.
It's going to be Alexa Bliss via magic. Ugh.
Oh, God. And if she doesn't win, then you would ask, well, why didn't she use her fucking magic to win this match?
Yep. No, she's going to voodoo that shit and win via magic.
So we
don't got to say anything else. That is how it's going. I don't know what we're doing anymore. Wait till she goes over on Bianca via magic. Oh, God. Talking about Bianca needed someone. They're going to move Alexa Bliss over there. Just fucking voodoo her into losing the belt. And then we have the men's one, Ricochet, John Morrison, Riddle, Drew Mack, Big E, Kevin Owens, Knock, and Seth Rollins. This may be, top to bottom, the best field Money in the Bank has ever had.
All right, so let's eliminate who's not going to win. Ricochet?
Fuck.
Morrison?
Don't take my pick away from me. No, just
but you know then not winning. Ricochet and Morrison have no chance of winning.
No, he battled hard enough
Rollins, to win TV. Yeah. Ricochet, Morrison, Rollins, this is not winning. Because like I said, if he's going into a program with Edge, I can't see him getting this briefcase back.
Maybe a fake cash in, Edge gets pissed, and then him and Edge start going. I don't know. Could be.
Nah. And Drew McIntyre can't win either. He's had enough shots at it. So that leaves Riddle, E, Owens, and Nakamura. Now, obviously, most people, including myself, want Big E to win this.
Yes.
Doesn't mean it's going to happen. I am very intrigued by the idea, which I don't think they'll do, of Kevin Owens winning this and turning heel somewhere down the line. Because, as we all know, Kevin Owens is a much better heel than a babyface, but it just so happens that the motherfucker is amazing at everything he does. And you know he's going to kill himself.
Yep.
He could win this. I think he's the least of the four people that left. Nakamura is probably third on this list. Because Nakamura with the briefcase might be fun, but then I feel like it's almost too much with the crown and the briefcase and Baron Corbin with the repossessed shit. It might be too much for Nakamura to win.
That's actually a funny
program.
The
only other person left of it is a funny program, which I didn't think it worked, but they have something there with downtrodden. I'm not getting my hair cut, Baron Corbin, who gets everything repossessed. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, broke Baron is a thing.
But you have something, and this is where you have to take this seriously with Riddle. Riddle could win this, and you can immediately put Riddle into a program with Randy Orton, because you remember Riddle got into this because Orton wasn't there and he had that match.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to establish Riddle as a threat, yes, he would have to have a banger with Randy Orton.
Yep.
All this shit's not a given, but it could be the right way to go if they wanted to go that direction, because Riddle clearly has something.
And he can be believable against the big guy champions. I'm going to pick Big E because that's my friend.
Yeah. I'm going to pick Big E because that's my friend. I have no other reason. Guys, I'm telling you this, being completely transparent, I don't know who's going to win. It's the one thing I want to keep sacred with pro wrestling is that I never ask the guy who's going over. I never ask these questions. And even though he's my really, really good friend, I don't want to know. I want to be just as surprised to see my friend win than anything else. So I told him not to tell me.
Where he told me was he knows who's going to win, which is hilarious. It may not be the case.
Right. But I asked him last week. I haven't asked. I was like, are these reports true that nobody knows who's winning the Money in the Bank? He was like, yeah, we don't know. That was last week. They might be kayfabing the talent and then telling them at the last minute, kind of like when Rollins found out he was cashing in at WrestleMania. They kayfabed everybody. I'm going to pick E because it feels like it makes the most sense, because everybody loves him and it feels like he hasn't had his moment in the sun yet. My heart says E. My gut says Riddle.
I'm going with Kevin Owens to win. Kevin Owens cut a promo at the end of SmackDown a week ago, where he calls Paul Heyman and Paul answers. And he's like, Paul, this is Kevin Owens. Don't hang up. I told you last year that I was going to win the Money in the Bank. And you tell Roman Reigns, I'm coming for him. And it was one of the best fucking promos. They keep on doing this with Talking Smack. The promos on there, if they were on television, oh my God. But this Kevin Owens promo, I was just mouth open, just amazed. Like, no, this guy's winning it. He is winning that time. He's winning the Money in the Bank. And I think Kevin Owens is that guy. So Kevin Owens, in my mind, is my pick to win this match. To me, Big E needs the Rumble win. Big E needs the baby face, crowd cheering, throwing the last guy over. That momentum, that build, that, oh my God, either if he moves over to Raw and he's going after Lashley, or if he's on SmackDown still and he's going after Roman, you need that moment where he feels like a threat, where he outlasts everyone, to get that super baby face heat going into WrestleMania against a true, true heel. So give me Big E for the Rumble. I'm predicting that already. He does not win Money in the Bank. Kevin Owens does.
All right. That's fair. I can see it going one of those two ways. Any other thing, I'd like to see Riddle win because I think he's very talented, but those are the only three that I think can win. Nakamura is my long shot.
No, agreed. So
there.
We'll see how it plays out. I am less enthusiastic about this card after talking it through right now, but it'll be interesting. We'll all be watching. We appreciate you guys for listening. As always, it's another great show. Follow us on social media at @CornerPodcast_ on Twitter, @CornerClub4Life on Instagram. Follow me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hale on all platforms. Shout out to Network Blue Wire. Shout out to all of the sponsors. Check out our other show, Wrestling with Stereotypes, on adfreeshows.com. While you are at it, great guest on there every 2 weeks. We release a new episode, so make sure you guys check those out. Stay safe. Stay variant free. Treat this shit like a Loki episode. No variants. Make sure you guys are good for the rest of the summer. Can't wait to, you know, hang out. See you guys. Please, please, please stay safe. Maybe some big news on the pod coming. We tease this every so often. Can't wait until we figure this out. You guys stay with us. We appreciate you all. Till next time, we're out.
Peace.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.